Welcome to Real Weddings with Sara. I'm Sara Kennedy from Irish Wedding Blog, one of Ireland's leading sources for wedding inspiration, advice and support. Real Weddings with Sara brings you an inside snoop of some of Ireland's best loved personalities and celebrity weddings. Join me as I indulge on all of the wedding goss. You are so welcome to Real Weddings with Sara, and I've got, do you know what? I've got a really, really lovely, gorgeous, fabulous episode today. So for some of you, you may recall that I had this particular guest on last year, and it created quite the wave when she said that we all need to be kissing our partners for up to 7 seconds. And it blew up. And who would have thought something so... Something that should be so easy would create so much of a divide across the nation. So I can only give this lady the finest introduction for stirring the pot. So I'm joined again by Lisa McFarland, who is the relationship coach. She's based in Northern Ireland, but she is absolutely fabulous. She's an absolute fountain of knowledge when it comes to all things relationship, resolution, building the right foundations. And we're just going to have a good chat today, Lisa. How are you?
I am good. And thank you. That 6 second kiss, it divides. I was doing a talk for 500 women a couple of weekends ago, and they were like, Lisa, do we have to? And I was like, yes, we do.
6 seconds like that.
Well, their biggest concern was, but Lisa, that is going to get me into trouble. That is not going to be a sick. And I said, you know what? I'm going to have to start saying the 6 second kiss is a standalone activity. It's a standalone activity.
With no strings attached.
No requirements. It's just the kiss. People
and
are
then
tending,
walk away.
Yes, people are tending to go towards the 20 second hug. People are liking the 20 second hug. So it's the 6 second kiss or the 20 second hug, whatever works for you. Think the hug gets people into less trouble.
Well, there you go. Keep it clean. And it's only for those who have come off the back of watching Married at First Sight Australia, there's the melting hug.
Oh,
the melting hug. Well, look, do you know the last time we were on, we covered quite a lot for when you're actually in marriage, I think. And probably because I suppose naturally I've led that conversation. I'm coming up to my 10th year of marriage. My God, where has that time gone? So, thank you. So we did talk an awful lot about those things that you don't always see are coming your way and how you manage that. But I think today, you know, when we think about it, a lot of my listeners, they have not got married yet. They're in the very early stages. So they're anything from a year to maybe, you know, 18 months out from their big day. If not, they're coming up in the next couple of weeks. So good luck to all of you. But, you know, upon reflection, there's so much to think about before you say I do. I suppose to set those foundations. And one of the things I always see with couples is, and no comparison to what you do, Lisa, but in the Catholic Church, you are told you have to go and do the marriage course, right? Fundamental, no priest will marry you without doing the marriage course, right? And that's fine. I did the marriage course. I found it actually really good. And actually, when we came out, we just were very lucky with the crew we got. That was actually very little on the religion side. It was a lot more about relationship. But we were very, very lucky that. And it was the only time in our whole wedding planning journey that we stopped and paused to actually think about life and moving forward together now as this unit, rather than, yes, we are individuals, but we now have a core responsibility to, as a family unit. And then I thought about you and I thought about, well, you know, not, you know, we see that not everybody's going to do the marriage course, but as well, not everybody. And even if you do, people still don't take that time out to nurture the relationship and think about certain things before they say I do. So I really just wanted to get your read on that, Lisa, and maybe we can have a chat about what can couples do right now when they're planning their wedding and they're getting all consumed with the table covers, you know, the linen and, you know, the menu and who's sitting beside Auntie Mary plans, and taking one for the team. So like, talk to me. What do you think?
Well, here's what I really think. I think it's absolutely ridiculous to enter into relationships and marriage without any education. I say to people all the time, bring me something that you don't educate yourself on, but you just start doing. You know, we take driving lessons. I mean, you and I setting up this, you know, how do we work Zoom? How do we press record? Oh, they've changed the thing, you know. Oh, you know, I mean, my kids, like anything they go to do, oh, I'll just download a YouTube video on that. You know, I mean, everything we do, we know we need to educate ourselves on.
100%.
We just know that innately, but not when it comes to relationships. We just jump in.
Why?
Oh, dearie me. I think the shame and guilt. You know, I think we're still here in this country. It's still very much like, you know, oh, we should just know how to do this. This should just come naturally. Sure, everybody's meant to be in relationship. You know, sure, you're meant to get married. But the bottom line is, sorry, and this is a wedding podcast, I'm sorry about this, half of marriages are going to end and another quarter are going to continue but be miserable. That's not great odds. And in any other walk of life, we would look at those odds and say, need to do something about that. Those odds aren't great. Let's do something about that. Now, the other thing we know is I think 85% of people who divorce get remarried within 5 years. So people want marriage. They want connection. They want love. It's innate in us.
Yeah.
Yet we don't educate ourselves on how to do it.
So when you talk about educate ourselves, like I'm there sitting there thinking, okay, are we reading a book here? Like what are we doing? Like what is educating ourselves in advance?
Well, I would love every single couple who listen to this podcast and or every single couple on this island and in the UK to come to someone like me for a couple of sessions or by my online course, Starting Strong, you know, just start strong. Start strong. Figure out what your love language is. Figure out what your attachment style is. Figure out what your argument style is. Figure out how to do healthy conflict. Figure out how to prioritize sex and intimacy in your relationship. Figure out how to do really good communication. You know, all those things.
So you're saying that, you know, majority of the time, you know, so either things can go sour, which we know, right? You know, and nobody wants to think that'll be them.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Nobody wants, at this point of the listenership that I have, nobody's in the mindset that things are going to go wrong. Okay. Yep. So it's over time, things can cause conflict, can come up, difference of opinion, different pressures, you know, and I suppose those pressures can be anything from money, you know, division in the house,
in-laws,
of workload,
in-laws, money, children, work. There's like there's a top four or five.
There's a top four. Oh. So so when you're talking about starting strong, just so I can get this right, and I think this is brilliant to hear that you actually have a course on this. So you're so like, my God, where has this been? You know, but you're so when you're saying starting strong, you're giving people, is it really that kind of like that nudge to start thinking and having a discussion between each other about some important topics to kind of almost self-diagnose to a certain extent? Okay.
So it's a little video. So there's a video about conflict, how to do healthy conflict. And then there's a little bit of homework on healthy conflict.
Okay.
There's another one about prioritizing your relationships, and that's all about love languages and all that sort of thing. And then there's another one on sex and intimacy and it's not about how to have sex. It's just about the,
I could see the male listeners are like, yeah, sign up.
Okay,
for that.
It's about how to have sex. Well, it's about how to increase your connection and keeping that intimate side alive, you know? Homework to do about that. Again, it's nothing too racy or anything. It's just a little bit.
6 seconds, isn't it?
That might be in there. But it's just simple. And it's just to get people dabbling their toe in the water of, remember that lady said about that? You know, that's a very good point. Why are we continuing to argue about this the same way over and over again and never getting anywhere? Or we could actually reprogram and argue and discuss and debate and come to a resolution like this. One of my favorite things to teach couples is how to have, we call it a rupture, a dispute, you know, so all couples are going to argue about something and none, and they're all going to argue around wedding stuff at this time, okay?
Yeah.
Whether the groom isn't as involved as he should be, or maybe he's overly involved, or maybe the bride is met, or maybe it's a same-sex couple and one wants this many people and one wants this, whatever it is. I think marriage and children are one of the, weddings and children are one of the two things that bring up all the stuff
for you. Yeah, they can bubble everything up, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And throw in all your in-laws and outlaws and aunts and uncles and all the things.
Yeah.
There's going to be ruptures. And my favorite thing is to teach couples how to sit in the tunnel of emotion to get to repair.
Okay.
And I know you've seen this, Sarah. You've seen the rupture and you've seen them come back repaired.
Mm-hmm.
See that mess in the middle? We need to get that bit smoother.
Because that just keeps repeating itself. It's a pattern.
And what we'll do is, even though we've done the work on ourselves to become secure attachment style, when we get into that rupture or that argument, I'm finding that most couples default to either anxious or avoidant. So when you're anxious and you want to, and you're in that emotional tunnel, you want to talk about it. And your partner, who most likely is avoidant, just wants to jump out of that tunnel constantly and go silent. Just check okay. out. Check out. Okay.
So I'm picturing, you know, in a couple, I've got bride here, and then she's going to get married to another bride, and you've got, they're fighting over something very trivial. It's never about the trivial thing, by the way. It's always something else that's bubbling up, I believe. So uh-huh. You know, I want to have this person at the wedding, says uh-huh. bride A, and bride B is saying absolutely over my dead body. So uh-huh. then the fight starts, and uh-huh. I say fight, but the disagreement uh-huh. And so bride A is like talking, I want to talk about this, I want to resolve it, and the other one's, I just want to pause and think about this mm-hmm. because, and you're coming at me now, and now I'm getting angry, and now I'm overwhelmed, and I'm going to shut down. Is that what we're talking about here?
Exactly.
Okay.
Or even bride number two could say, I've told you they're not coming,
right? And there's no movement on that. It's not up for discussion.
I've told you they're not coming. And bride one is saying, but a better question would be, why is it so important that this person come to the wedding?
I get you.
Getting curious.
Yeah, but it's more about, it becomes almost competitive about who's going to win.
And totally polarized.
Yeah, yeah, I get you.
Rather than being interested in, why is it such a hard no? And why is it such a hard yes? What is under this? Mm. Why is this so important?
Mm.
You know? It's a yes for me because my mum will never speak to me again if I don't invite this aunt. That's a whole different story.
Absolutely.
That's a whole different story.
Yeah.
Is it a hard no because financially we are at our capacity here? There's no way we can feed one more mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the why? What's underneath?
Yeah, and that's when you can build and compromise. You know, mm-hmm. well, if it is financial, then let's see, is there somebody else we can mm-hmm. bump off so that mm-hmm. we can solve this? Because I can't live it myself if I don't have that person there. I get you. So when you're thinking about this with a couple, so let's say you've got a couple who are sitting there and they're just, look, they're plodding along and everything's fine. So as far as they're concerned, there is no problem, because right now in the bubble, there's never really a problem apart from little disputes that might click in, and they may never feel like they're actually that big. So, you know, if you look at your health, like, you can eat the sweets till the cows come home, but eventually that's going to come back and bite you in the ass when you eat too much of it. So is it like a little bit of that, like the when you're talking about taking that time out now, it's actually you're building, as we said before, so building those foundations. So A, there's awareness, so you can kind of see these things and go, ah, this is it. I know what rodeo this is and I can cope with it. Mm-hmm. And I suppose B, have the toolkit, so when it does come up, I can deal with it.
The toolkit. It's what we do is we just repeat and repeat and repeat what we saw growing up
or we've
used in other relationships. So more often than not, we use the argument style that we saw our parents using.
Right.
Isn't that mad?
Yeah.
Don't we? I mean, we really do.
I never really thought of it that way.
So my mum was, she was, we call it huffing, you know, sulking, cold shoulder. You know, I'm going to say that we all know a mum in Ireland who does this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it would have been very much, you know, ask your daddy to pass the salt.
Oh, okay. I'm never that bad.
And this could have went on for days. So I just thought that's how you behaved. I just thought when you wanted your way in a relationship, that's how you behaved. So I would say all my words, and then when I didn't get the response I wanted, I would sulk, huff, give the cold shoulder. I did that for 24 years of my relationship. And it wasn't until we went to therapy.
And it's only punishing you, really, because you're the one carrying the anger.
Yes, but in the moment it feels great. In the moment,
because the alternative is backing down and saying, sorry, you're giving in.
It's the same as shouting, door slamming. It all feels great in the moment. But now we've done this behavior and we are in it and we don't know how to get out of it. That's the part that doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So when we went to therapy and she told me that it was actually emotional abuse.
Oh my God. Guilt. The guilt. I'm not laughing, but it's like, Jesus. Never think of it like that.
Well, do you want to know what I did when she told me it was emotional abuse?
Did you give it silent treatment?
The whole session. And she said to me, are you...
Oh, you're a pro.
Exactly. She thought she was going to mess with me. She said, are you actually giving me the silent treatment? And I said, yes, I am. And she said, you know, you're an adult. You can't do that anymore. I was like, I am not messing, but you better give me some tools like within the next 3 minutes, because I feel like I've just been stripped of my whole shell. And Brené Brown would talk about this. If people don't follow Brené Brown, when you're going through these weddings, you need to follow Brené Brown. Brené Brown would say about this, she's like, I felt like a turtle that had my shell ripped off and I was in a bramble patch.
Yeah.
And she said, I'm going to help you within 3 minutes. I promise I'm going to help you. So she talked about this rupture and sitting in the emotional tunnel to repair. And it's now my joy to be able to pass that on.
Yeah.
I'm quite a determined person. So once she told me that and I got over myself, I did a lot of inner child work and figuring out where that had come from. And a lot of forgiveness for myself about how I was just repeating and repeating. I did a lot of work about that. And then I decided I would never, ever, ever do it again.
Yeah.
And obviously the way the universe would have it, the opportunity to sulk and give the silent treatment came around quite quickly. And I said to my husband, when I feel like I'm going to do that behavior, what's actually going to happen is I'm going to ask for a hug. So I said, I need a hug. And he said, yes, no problem. And I had to walk, I'm going to say 6 steps across the kitchen to receive said hug. And I thought my skin
killed
was going
you.
To fall off.
Killed me.
My nervous system was in overdrive. Got the hug, 20-second soothing hug. Got the hug. Was able to then travel down the emotional tunnel and get to repair.
That's phenomenal. But like, look at the level of where you had to get to have that awareness. Whereas couples can recognize that early on and avoid it before it gets to the point where you go, how do I get out of this? And we're actually going to end up growing apart as a result of it.
Exactly. We had a chat the other day about stuff that I want done in the house. And what I teach my couples and use in our own relationship, I say things like, I need to talk about something and I need a safe place to land. So that's my partner's cue to get their superhero cape on. I'm coming in hot here, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm also
There's a brainwave of brewing. Let's be ready.
Exactly. Prepared. And he is very within his rights to say, babe, I have 15 million emails to respond to today. Can we do this after dinner tonight? Very, very, very entitled to do that because we want our partner to come at it as their best self.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I then started to spill all the things that I had planned in my head, and he sat in it and we talked about it and we disagreed about bits that we didn't think were necessary. And we went back and we went forward and we sat in the tunnel and we got to the end of the tunnel and we got to a good resolution. And we walked into the house and I said, we could never have done that years ago.
Yeah.
And he said, no, we never could have done that years ago. No, he did have to go and have a little nap afterwards because I think his nervous system
emotionally drained.
Emotions were just drained right out of him.
So what you're telling me, Lisa, is you can still wring them dry, but it's just a different technique.
It's just kinder.
It's just, you're not kicking the puppy anymore.
Exactly.
I said, exactly.
So after his little 20-minute snooze, I said, how are you feeling about all that? He goes, I'm feeling great about it because I didn't go to McFarland Land where I would have in the past. And I was like, excellent, sweetheart. Brilliant.
McFarland Land.
Yeah. And that was my, I was sulking and then he would go to McFarland Land where everything was fine. It's all fine. I'm not annoyed. Everything is just fine. Everything is great. Where everything was not great.
Yeah, so you're able to have that two-way dialogue because you've got such self-awareness. And also you know that just by having a conflict, it's not the end. And I think there's some couples that were in touch with me, mainly brides. And, you know, there's that concern about bringing things up in case you're going to rock the apple cart.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to, you know, any member of a couple right now who's afraid to address, to even go there about, mm-hmm. you know, discussing the relationship because they really want this wedding to happen and they really want everything to be right. And not that there's an elephant in the room, but they're not really chatting about we're going to be together now forever. Like,
yeah.
Like what advice would you have for somebody who is quite daunted by the prospect
mm-hmm.
of actually opening up?
So what I tell couples all the time is try to say these words. A situation has happened and I'm going to need to have a wee chat about it. So it's not you did, or you did, or you should have. There's a situation has come up and I'm going to need a bit of a time with that. Again, your person can say, yes, babe, tell me right now, I'm ready. Or they can say, can I just get the kids to bed? Can we do bath time and then do whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. And then it's about coming to your partner and saying, look, I'm feeling sad about this, or I'm feeling we could do better in this area.
Yeah.
Or I'm feeling that our sex life has really gone on the back burner while we're organizing this wedding. And that just seems a bit strange to me that our sex life has gone down the toilet when actually we're committing to be together and only have sex with each other for the rest of our lives. What do you think? So it's about not saying the word you,
and you're responsible for it.
So totally different conversation. You are ignoring our sex life. You are distancing yourself from me. You are making me feel like you have immediately pushed your person onto their back foot. And the only place they have to go is to attack.
Yeah, back to rat into the corner, it's going to bite. Yeah.
This other piece is when we say all our I feel words, our person must not say this. I'm sorry you feel like that.
But.
That would be like me coming to you today, Sarah, and me saying, I have a sore neck. And you going, oh, I'm sorry you feel like that. No, I actually have a sore neck.
Yeah.
Makes sense? The slight change is, I'm sorry. I made you feel like that.
It's taking some responsibility, yeah.
Only narcissists lie in their bed at night and think, how can I upset this person tomorrow? Okay? All right?
It's hard to believe that there are people out there programmed like that.
It is. And I'm going to say anybody who comes to you is not programmed like that. And the majority of people who come to me are not programmed like that. And am I remembering correctly, door cupboards was a thing for
Still
you?
Still there, Lisa.
Still there. Okay. So Still your partner there. Does not lie in bed and think, I'm going to leave those cupboards open to annoy her. Okay. He doesn't do that. All right. But the bottom line
that is not the narrative I've built in my head, Lisa.
But the bottom line is it does annoy you. Okay. Yeah. It could be as simple as being late. You know, you're meant to be meeting the florist at such and such a time and your partner is 10 minutes late. The narrative in our head is they don't care about this wedding. It's only me that cares about the wedding. They don't even care about the florist. Our person more than likely did not go out of their way to hurt us. But they have hurt us.
Yeah.
They didn't plan to, but it's about taking responsibility and say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You know what? I should have left work 10 minutes early. I'm sorry that hurt you.
Yeah.
We have another business together, which I only go to now one day a week. But we were leaving the other day. We had to go to a meeting at 3 and we were going to grab a quick lunch and then go to the meeting. And I said these fateful words, I'm just going to go and speak to Janet before I leave. And I could just see his face. He was like,
we're not going to be leaving on time.
Sweetheart, we have 2 minutes and we have to be X for this time. And da 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 da. And I, 2 minutes, I promise, 2 minutes. Bombed into the car a good 25 minutes later. And and he said, we're not, like, I mean, he was cross. And he said, we're not going to make lunch. There's no way we're going to make lunch. We're going to have to get a sandwich on the way. There's no way we're going to make lunch. You know, I ask you to be quick. I ask you to, and I was looking forward to lunch, all as I feel words. And you know what I said back? I said, don't feel like that.
Oh, but he already felt like that.
He just looked across at me in the car and you know that look. And I went, oh, yep.
They weren't the words. They weren't the right ones. Find other ones.
Just that 12-year-old just rolled out of my mouth there now. She snuck up and she just rolled out of my mouth there now. And I thought, I literally tell people this every day of the week. I went, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. If it wasn't, I wanted to be like one of those cartoons where you just take it back. I'm like, I'm sorry. You know what? You're right. And I'm sorry that, you know, that hurt you. I'm sorry about that.
Much Done. Bigger difference. And it's diffused.
Done.
So talk to me about then your Starting Strong program, your online course. So a couple logs on. And as you said, you kind of, you've broken it down, am I right, saying into like this four core sections, is there? Or is there three?
Three
core sections.
Three little videos of me blathering on like this. So one is prioritizing your relationship. So
a lot of
brides and grooms almost forget to prioritize the relationship when they're prioritizing the wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
So what they tell us is that couples need to be spending at least 90 minutes a week talking about good, interesting stuff, not life admin.
Yeah.
Okay. Good, interesting stuff. So, and a date night a week. And they need to be kissing and hugging and they need to be investing in their sex life. That is what the data tells us for a successful relationship.
Okay.
I did a podcast with a guy last week and he told his wife that he needed 6 months by himself to build the business. I said, if I ever heard a man speak, that was man speak right there. So he had been in, been in the services, so he that was their relationship, that he would be away for 6 months at a time.
Yeah.
So he just wanted her to treat it just like that. And I said, Jay, if I had been coaching you during that time, I would have been saying the absolute opposite. I would have been saying 90 minutes a week, kissing or hugging every day, and making time for intimacy at least once a weekend. You know, whatever that looks like, whatever that looks like. Okay.
Yeah.
That is the core of what we need to sustain healthy relationships.
Because it's like, kind of, it keeps you connected. Am I right? Is that it?
And that's what he said. He said the 6 months passed and we just didn't even recognize each other. And then a little baby at that stage.
Ships passing in the night. I think that that is the thing, is that I suppose we get caught up in all of the different life things, work and all of those different things that, yeah, you're right. Do you know what is great is actually at this stage of somebody's relationship. And look, there's a lot of people that are already, they already have their kids. It's still no harm, you know, to actually go, these are the things that are going to be that we really need to kind of prioritize. So then you get the kind of that introduction into the relationship and the kind of those core things that you need to do. So what then comes next?
So then there's a little bit of homework on that. So it's all about love languages and attachment styles.
Is that like questionnaires? Is it a conversation?
Little questions, little quizzes to do, all that sort of thing. And then you can show each other your answers or not, whatever. Love languages, we absolutely should know what our partner's love language is. Mm-hmm. What we do is we love in our language rather than how our partner wants to be loved.
Yeah. Makes I get sense. You. Yeah. Makes so whatever my love language is, I'm exporting that onto them, assuming that that's.
You said you're married, is it the English Married at First Sight you watch or the
Australian? Oh, I'd watch all of them. Whatever country, I'll watch all of them.
The British one, do you know Paul Brunson, who's in the British one?
Yes, yes.
So they were married 7 years and he was sleeping on the settee. He was sleeping on the couch and he thought his wife was just a selfish madam. And they were just, it wasn't working. They came across the love language test and it changed everything.
Okay.
Her love language is gifts. Now, gifts are that packet of crisps you see in the shop, a packet of biscuits, a fruit that your person likes, a bottle of wine. Why is everything unhealthy? We're not talking about, it doesn't have to be a Gucci handbag. It's the simplest little things.
It's the simple things I was passing and I thought of you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That floor that you see in the, you know, garage or Tesco's or whatever. So when they did their love language test, hers came out as gifts. He was just getting to the stage where he was starting to get, making a lot of money. And he thought that she was just becoming really money grabby. Turned out she had been loved by her dad via gifts.
Mm.
And he loved her really well via gifts. And that's how she felt loved via gifts.
Yeah.
And like myself with the sulking, he just made that change that day and turned everything around.
So when we're talking about love languages for couples right now listening, what are those love languages? I think we might have covered this in the previous one.
Time, touch, words of affirmation, acts of service, and gifts.
Gifts. I think mine was acts of service.
Yeah. And if you have little children, it's very likely to be acts of service.
Yeah.
When my children were little, my husband and I, our primary is time. So that just happens really naturally.
Yeah.
My secondary is words of affirmation. His secondary is acts of service. So I naturally love him via words. And he naturally loves me via words, acts of service.
I get you.
So if he's out cutting the grass, it's for me to remember, take him a cup of coffee, you know, do something that's an act of service. You'd think I was the Queen of Sheba. Me saying, the grass looks great. It's okay. But a cup of coffee speaks more love to him.
So for example, right, I could spend the whole weekend cleaning the house. Not one thing could be said about it.
Mm-hmm.
But he might load the dishwasher. And I'm like, well, it's a work of art. Mm-hmm. He's like, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So this is what I'm doing.
Exactly. The one that couples have the biggest problem with is touch.
Yeah.
Now, that could be anything from holding hands to sex. But that's the biggest one I see in my practice as the biggest disconnect.
Because you could have someone who's a real hugger, cuddler.
Yep.
Arm around you, and you've got the other person who just really likes their own space. It's like,
So you know that they maybe want to sleep by themselves for two nights a week, and the person is horrified. Why do they not want me?
But it's nothing to do with them. It's just they like their space.
Yep.
Yeah, and I can understand that since having kids, because you have no space. Yep. Nothing is yours.
A lot of mums, you know, I mean, touched out by the end of the day. And then their partner hasn't touched anybody all day.
That's it. Yeah. Do you know what? I would actually say I always thought I was a touchy-feely person until I was two kids in. And now I'm like, I've nothing left in the tank. I just want my own little cocoon. Let me be. Stop hanging off me. Stop jumping on me. Not my partner, but my kids. That's where all of that's going is to them. So it's like you've got nothing left in the tank. So I can completely understand. I could see how that would be, probably because it is touch, that it could probably feel like a rejection if the other person, if that's their love language, they don't know anything different.
And then touch comes into initiating, you know. So
exactly, it gets sex, the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm. Initiating sex and getting turned down is huge for couples.
Yeah.
It's huge for couples, you know.
Yeah. So they get their love language. So now all of a sudden, from doing those two pieces, we now have a little bit of clarity about ourselves. So we've got that priority piece at the very start to try and understand a little bit about, you know, our values. And then we start to understand our love language. And now we're kind of going, okay, eureka, we're getting somewhere. So then you've got this third final part. So what happens there?
Yeah. So it's the priorities in relationships, then it's the healthy conflict, and then it's the sex and intimacy.
Okay.
So each one has its own, and the course is yours forever. So if you find in 6 months, you're maybe just like, what did that woman say? You just have it. You can just use it again.
Or you could be 2 years in, you've had your first baby, and you're sleep deprived, and everything is kind of changing, and the dynamics are changing, and you could go back into it.
Yeah. And my sort of wish is that when people start gently like this, that they would then say, and I coached lots of young couples who exactly that, they've had a baby, they're thinking about another baby, and they're just like, we're just not where we used to be. You know, my hope is that once you've done the course, then coming for a little bit of coaching is much less scary.
Yeah. And just, as you say, that's, you know, so many people feel daunted by that because it's almost like saying there's something wrong.
Exactly.
You know, things don't have to be wrong to want to do better.
Where let's flip that mindset. Of course, there's something wrong. You haven't got any education on how to do this.
Yeah. There's no handbook.
There's no handbook. And also, when it comes to your children, there are handbooks, as we know. And there's also no shame and guilt on saying, what was that book you read? Or who was that you talked to? Or what was the sleep specialist you got in? Or was there a potty training person you talked to? No. Shame and guilt.
You'll throw any amount of money on the sleep specialist when you haven't slept in months. Exactly. But it's so right. It's like, you know, you're about to embark. And you see, I think it's because for so many couples, they've come to a realization, we're really happy together and we want to be together. So what could possibly be wrong? We don't need a course. That's why I see so many resisting doing any sort of marriage course, you know, before they get married. And I think, unfortunately, there's been this stigma where, you know, for a lot of the marriage courses, you're going to be brought in and being given a kind of a lesson in the Bible. And, you know, there are other ways that you can nurture your relationship and take, you know, even if it's a half day out in total.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the space of 1 year before you get married, it's a no-brainer.
You know,
they're like the vital skills you need. And only because we just happen to strike gold with our marriage course that, like you, Lisa, I would be a silent treater.
Mm-hmm.
It's an art, but very early on, because I had that, I know that's my go-to. And I rarely, ever since that day, I rarely go into silent treatment mode. It would take a lot to put me there. It's because I can't find the words. I'm angry rather than I'm punishing you with silent treatment.
Where did you learn it?
I don't know, because my mum would be quite the talker. She talks things out. My dad would be, he's not, again, he wouldn't be, you know, definitely no way silent treatment. He would be probably more like the way your husband was and everything's fine. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know. I think it's a shutdown mechanism, probably.
I was going to say it could be that your mum, as a teenager, maybe talked at you. So it's just, I'm going to just hunker down over here.
I tell you, she may listen to this, mother, now. Let that be a lesson to you, ma'am. Are you listening, ma'am? The trauma.
You just stand there. The shutters go down.
The shutters go down. Do you know what I find? I don't have the words. And I'm like, and then I recall, I always remember going, I feel like I'm giving in if I remove from this position, because I'm strong in this position that I can't back down. But I realized that. And actually at the time when we were doing this, I was none the wiser that we had a conflict style until we saw this. They played it out from The Breakup, you know, the movie, The Breakup, with Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn. And it was about the lemons, and it's never about the lemons, this fight. So if you haven't seen the movie, The Breakup, you have to see it. And I just remember the light bulb going off, going, Jesus, I do that. And I just remember when Owen was communicating about, like, when I give him the silent treatment, how it makes him feel. I was like, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, shit. Okay. Like, because actually that was not my intention, but it's just it's the way I react. It's like, I'll say something I regret, you know?
Yeah. So, and I think the thing is, you can, when you're in, you know, when you're in conflict, you can say, I feel like I'm going to say the wrong thing now. I need 10 minutes to go and walk the dog. That's not the silent treatment.
But it would evolve to the silent treatment.
Yeah.
Because I'd let it linger, and then I'd be like, no, I'm angry now and you can feck off and I'm not talking to you now. That's it. You can go and whistle.
The missing piece is when you're taking the dog a walk, when you're having those minutes, it's, what is fueling this anger? What am I feeling underneath? And it's usually scared, hurt, undermined, disrespect.
Accumulation of things
had an argument with somebody in work, or my mom annoyed me, or whatever it is. You know, it's the what I feel underneath that eruption.
That's it. It's never about that one thing and that eruption. You're
I'm
right.
Coming back and saying,
and I think this is just so important for couples to understand. I like, honest to God, Lisa, I just wish I could put you up on the pedestal and like just tell everyone come to the rock and you come and preach, because, you know, these are the things that preempt so much in advance,
The two worst pieces of advice I ever got was, don't sweat the small stuff. Absolutely sweat the small stuff.
Sweat it out until it's gone.
Small stuff is where it lives. We would turn up for our worst enemy in the big stuff. Sweat the small stuff. The small stuff is the grit that's going to get in the gears. Okay. Yeah. Second worst piece of advice was never go to bed on an argument. Please, 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 Lord in heaven, put a pin in it and get a good night's sleep. I swear.
Oh, your perspective can shift.
70% of arguments wouldn't be if we all ate our dinner and went to bed. Okay. We don't do podcasts at 11 o'clock at night because we're not at our best selves. All right. We're going to say something wrong. Okay. Put a pin in it. I love you. Can please put a pin in this. Let's sleep on it and come back to it tomorrow. It's the coming back to it tomorrow that's very, very, very important.
Yeah. 100%.
And sex and intimacy and connection are so important. Remember, those doors are less annoying when your sex life is good. We've talked about this.
We've had this conversation. Okay. I beg to differ. A door open
I didn't
in
say,
your kitchen is annoying.
I didn't say not annoying. I said slightly less annoying. And there's probably slightly more hope of him closing the doors.
It's more like, if you continue to close those doors, things will work in your favor.
Exactly.
If you continue to leave them open, it's not looking good for you.
The carrot and sticks. I have the solution for you. I just got a new kitchen. Anybody who follows me on Instagram, their hearts were all broke because they were like, oh, Lisa, how are you coping? Self-closing.
No.
It has to be done. You just have to get, you have to find a
Sometimes you have to work around these.
You find a workaround. I am the cupboard opener. I'm the cupboard opener in our house. So self-closing is what we have now. You just literally push it and it sorts itself out.
Would you believe that, you know, even in this house, like, all of my kids, they still wouldn't even bother pushing it back.
Well, <isn't. laughs>
this is my life.
This is our lives, you're right. And we're not built to be islands. We're built to be in relationship and in communication.
100%. And this is it. And like, because I do have the logical skills to understand that these things aren't really a big deal to leave the press doors open, they don't evolve into being an eruption and into an argument, because I realize there is no point, because why am I going to damage a relationship over a feckin' door? You know, so it's...
And next time, Sarah, next time we'll talk about polarity.
What's this? What's this word?
To give them something to
this
wait
is a cliffhanger.
For.
What is it? What is it? What is it?
Oh, fine. Polarity is opposites attract. So that 100%. what you saw in your partner, I know that that also leaves cupboard doors open, but that I'm going to imagine a cupboard door open person is, you know, good fun and, you know.
Yeah. Like the head is in a very different
place. The head's
place.
In the clouds and everything's going to be all right. Don't need to panic. We've got this.
Not a planner.
Not a planner. Lie by the seat of the pants. And you love that. And that's what you were attracted to. Just so happens there's these little bits that come along with it. But it's about reminding
ourselves.
Take
the rough with the smooth.
Exactly. This is polarity. This
okay.
Is
polarity. Well, that's going to be, we have to do a deep dive on that. Lisa, where can everybody hear more from you and also have a look around at your online course that they can do from home?
Yeah. So it's Instagram, relationship.coaching.ni. Website Relationship Coach NI, I believe, but you will not be missing the Starting Strong course. If you follow me on Instagram, you will not
it's
miss
up
it.
There in the links. Being okay,
everywhere. And by the time this just has one more wee tweak, but by the time this podcast goes out, it will be everywhere, and I'll be in my LinkedIn and my website's there, and just have a wee nosy about. And there's also tons of free stuff. There's tons of free resources as well, which you can start with to figure out whether you like my style, and then see where we go from there. And that. It's like, I'm starting it as a starter off thing. I'm putting it on for £100. So that's like,
is that all?
120.
Oh God, I would have thought that was more expensive. Like the marriage courses are a lot more expensive than that.
We'll have to start this ball rolling somewhere.
Yeah, I get you. Well, so now's the time, sign up.
And wedding season.
This is it. What a time to be alive. Lisa, thank you so much for your time. It's always a pleasure. I can talk to you all day, every day. And I know that everyone listening to this is definitely going to learn something they didn't know before. So thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Real Weddings with Zara. Thanks to producer Ruth Devaney,
voiceover extraordinaire Phil Cawley, and Pink Champagne Wedding Band for our Cool Finds jingle. Join me next week, where we will be chatting to another top guest to get the scoop about their wedding day and married life. Until then, you can find me at Irish Wedding Blog on social media channels.